IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome to episode 67 of the Killing It, Podcast. I'm Carl. I'm joined today, as always, by Dave and Ryan. Not going to ask where you've been. Doesn't matter.
Well, we were just commenting on Ryan's office keeps getting upgraded.
Like,
it's slow.
None of us go anywhere, but Ryan somehow magically has things show up in his office, furniture and shelving and lighting.
There's a plant even, too.
Like, we're advancing the technology. My camera can do pan, tilt, and zoom now. I'm getting so sophisticated and advanced, people might not be able to pry me back out of here when it becomes okay.
And it will someday.
Someday.
Yeah, but Carl, when you said I don't need to ask where you guys have been, I thought you were going to say because we already know, because we're following you, because I think that is one of the byproducts of our pandemic world, is realizing just how connected everything is, and all of these connected systems, they're watching you. We just upgraded our television, major monumental thing in our household. It is the first voice recognition, legit assistance-based device that we have deployed. We've talked about it here before. We understand all the voice automation, voice as the UI. We have aggressively resisted it for privacy reasons. As much as I enjoy the concept of home automation, we finally deployed one. And what we learned in about a day, it sucks. It knows everything about me from all of my devices, but it cannot recognize my voice, and I enunciate.
You're the master of the house.
Your house is the opposite of mine, where there's one everywhere within listening distance. No, and
right.
I live in jealousy of an automated home. I want to be the Jetsons when I grow up, but until we figure out the privacy stuff.
So I just have to ask, because I don't have anything voice activated except by accident. So is it very natural language, or do you have to know precise commands? Hey, volume up 14% or whatever.
This one is designed to be very natural language, but it is very system dependent, right? Because if your soundbar is the right brand of a soundbar, then you can make it go up incrementally. You can just say up and it'll go up one, and you go up, 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 or whatever. Or if it's not the right brand, you have to be very robotic with it and precise. And the thing that I have since temporarily turned it off, because what we learned is it hears phrases on the television and it triggers its own circular loop of voice recognition. And when it started changing its own channels because it heard a phrase it thought it recognized, I was like, all right, George Orwell, stop.
So is it not one of the two? Is it not one of the two major brands, either the Amazon or the Google? Is it something else?
Oh, it's the insides. The operating platform is Google Assistant.
Okay.
But then, even though it is a significant OEM of the technology, implementation matters, people.
So I suspect that this is the rabbit hole where you come back and say, and now I've upgraded. I have a 17 microphone installation in my house so that the TV always understands me.
That might be the next office upgrade cycle is, you know, if I have a sit stand desk, I have a zooming camera. I'm going to need to get some like robotics in here and some voice activation. So I don't have to keep using the buttons.
Alrighty. Well, so our first topic is not about automation. Our second one is. Our first talk is about regulation, Dave.
Yeah. So this is a bit of breaking news coming out of my Business of Tech podcast. So this is releasing on the Tuesday. The previous Wednesday, I reported on the show that in the state of Louisiana, there is now a law requiring MSPs and MSSPs that are doing business with any government entity in the state of Louisiana to register with the state. They additionally have to report any cyber incidents, be it a cyber breach or a ransom payment has to also be reported. So this is the beginning of the regulatory move on very much the technology service provider space. We've had tons of conversation around privacy regulation, but here's a first version where if you are delivering any of our classic definitions of managed services, as well as managed security services, since the law defines both, you're now a somewhat quasi-regulated industry, at least in the state of Louisiana. And my statement is I believe this is the beginning, not the end point. Oh, yeah. And I wanted to throw this out because I thought, you know, I've published a video that came out yesterday kind of giving some editorial comments, but guys, I figured you'd have some thoughts on what this means for our space.
So first of all, you know, we have been predicting this for, I don't know, 4 or 5 months. And so it's not a super big surprise. I have to say, I think it's super welcome. I think I've been for 10 years saying we need to be far more professional. And unfortunately, you know, part of that means there needs to be standards. Somebody has to set those. Somebody has to agree to them. There's a newish Facebook group. Amy Babinchak started and asked Dave and I to help admin, and it's on regulation of our industry. I think that we need to participate in that conversation. And to be honest, the minimal pieces are defining who we are, defining what is an incident, defining what needs to be reported, and making people register. You know, if I were an accountant, I would assume all of those things were already in place. So if we want to be professionals in that sense, then we need to welcome it as well.
See, and this is where I think this is a sign of logical maturing in our industry, internally and externally, right? Internally, because this is an industry that thrives on standardization and interoperability standards, right? We live in an IEEE world. We live in a world where software has to be able to interconnect based on standard languages. It's natural that those of us who do this for a living should evolve in that direction once we've figured out not just, ooh, this is a new thing, but you do it over and over again, it's a sign of maturity. But the flip side, I think, is what's much more interesting. It is a sign of maturity in terms of how the market views us. We are no longer just trunk slammers. We are no longer just two guys in a garage figuring some things out, doing some services. Again, for better or worse, what we do has arrived at mission critical status. Like, if you mess up, if you manage people's real-time systems, and you mess up, there are material impacts for your client. And as soon as they agreed, it's not just a nice to have, it's a must have. I mean, everybody's marketing material says it's not just a nice to have. Well, guess what? They believe you now, and they're going to regulate us. I think it's perfectly logical and predictable. I think it's excellent from a customer experience point of view.
Yeah, and I want to weigh in with, because I didn't make this in my editorial comment, but it's a really great analogy. We're under this society, businesses, the economy, are under direct attack by organized crime. Yes. Let me take the analogy and make everything physical for a moment. If a gang of criminals broke into your office with weapons, took hostages, and demanded ransom, you would cry out for some level of government regulation on the space. That's literally what is happening. Criminals are breaking into your space, are taking hostages, and demanding ransom. It's just happening virtually, but it doesn't mean it's any less in need of some kind of regulation around the protectors. If you're going to be the person responsible for this, you have to wrap it. And yes, we have the laws defining the crime itself, but we have to determine who are the people that are actually qualified to take this on. Right. And that's what the regulation needs to do.
The funny thing is, you can see instantly that there's going to be this kind of tension between amateurs and professionals, right? So 17, 18 year old decides, hey, I want to fix my grandma's computer. I'm going to charge $100, you know, because I don't like my grandma. And, you know, they do a decent job. And then when they decide they're going to go into business on their own, the first thing they do is become a trunk slammer. And then they learn that there are standards. They learn that there are professional ways of doing things. I think that we will go through a, you know, probably 10 or 15 year phase where we become more professional, but you're going to see abuse. For example, people will just say, hey, sign this, which says that you didn't pay me. And that way I don't have to report it and I can come be in under the radar and people are going to save money because they have hired an amateur. And so the laws are going to have to deal with that. Not today, not in even a couple of years, but in 5 or 10 years.
But see, I agree with you. You can still have your cousin's uncle's brother do your taxes for you, even though that is a regulated industry. You can still have somebody be your bookkeeper locally, individually, unregulated. But the consequences that come from mistakes in that environment leave all of the risk on the customer. If you paid an amateur to do your taxes and then there is a problem that gets audited later on, it's all on you as the consumer.
Actually, that's a perfect example. I have heard advertisements where tax pros have said, if your tax professional didn't sign that they were the preparer of your taxes, you need to go back and have them change that.
Yes, absolutely.
That's a perfect example of the
abuse that exists and for
well-regulated industry.
Exactly. For exactly the same reason that everybody heard that about their taxes and went, well, yeah, I want that guy to be a professional and be accounted for. I want that exact same level of insurance or assurance with my technology professionals. And it's not because I don't think that the industry does it well. It's because I believe this stuff matters. And your customers are finally waking up. And in the last 110 days, they've all looked around and said, can you imagine how quickly we would have gone out of business if we didn't have technology? Hey, this stuff matters, guys. Louisiana's first.
I'll end this topic by saying, like, look, I put out a video that's available on my YouTube channel. You can find the link at mspradio.com. I'm specifically have some directives on things that we can do in that video as an industry. The first is you have to get up to speed on this. You've got to be getting, and you have to get educated and you have to get involved and you have to start demanding that, because this will happen to our community unless we get involved, and that happens with the community. So my call to action is you got to get involved and get that data information.
Excellent point.
Very good. So topic number two is maybe a little more fun.
Way more fun.
Also really scary.
But super scary, because you know what? It's never any good if it isn't like involves some
the dating. Net amount of fun is a little bit positive.
Right. It's like a horror movie, really. So it's entertaining, but also very scary.
Yeah.
So we're going to put a link in here to an article about some face-changing technology, which is, I mean, if you watch the video, it's kind of cool.
It's pretty cool. And it's Disney developed. They've got a movie quality face swapping technology that allows them to move around and create essentially really great deep fakes. You know, these fake videos where they can move faces around. It allows for really cool ideas like anonymizing sources. Like if you want to protect a source, you can just change their face and just put them on TV. You can move actors around. Like there's some really cool stuff. But we really ought to think about what it means.
See, as people who were born to be fascinated by the advancement of technology, I have been an early adopter of and a proponent of many things that never fully commercialized, right? Really cool technologies that just didn't really last because they were a little bit too eclectic, right? I think technology is fascinating in its own right. And on that basis, I look at this technology and go, woohoo, this is the coolest thing we've seen in years. And then as somebody who lives in the real world, particularly in a world where video is the gold standard of if you didn't see it with your own eyes, it didn't happen. And now there's cameras everywhere and we can watch everything. Now you can't believe that either. Now, again, Dave said the magic words, Disney developed, which means super expensive, right? Like these guys have put lots of money into it. They've spent hundreds of millions of dollars developing this. In our accelerating development world, it's going to be available for a digital download in your basement within like the snap of a finger.
Exactly. Yeah, it's expensive today, but you know, when Pixar first came out with their first little movie, it cost millions and millions of dollars. And then a year later, they were doing animated cartoons on Saturday that were computer generated because, you know, the technology grew so fast and became so cheap so fast. I mean, that's the deal with what we do for a living. I would also point out my favorite Adobe program that I play with occasionally and have never found a good use for is Character Animator. It's included in the Adobe Cloud bundle, but it basically is the same technology, which, I mean, it's much more graphic oriented and it takes a lot more work. But, you know, Disney's looking at bringing back their, you know, creating new movies starring actors who've been dead for 50 years, right? Because they could do it with the technology that they have.
Well, and they've already done it. I mean, the Star Wars films have already reused, you know, actors that have passed. You know, Carrie Fisher was still alive when she was reused, but the actor who played Moff Tarkin was also computer generated. Like, you can easily see this. And now, of course, the estates say, well, we can just revive dead people and put them back on stage.
Right. So what is the danger for IT professionals? Like, are we going to see ransomware where a video shows up of your boss saying, please transfer $1 million to this.
Well, if you could, I mean, we laugh. You could create an on-the-fly video call that, you know, and pre-record, right, and have somebody say, "Hey, you know, here's the video call saying to do that transfer."
So are we going to see that?
Yes, absolutely. The cyber criminals are smart and they are using the technology. Of course,
we're gonna well see funded. It. I mean, so how come everybody doesn't own a BDR? I know this is a sidetrack, but what the hell? Like, why is ransomware a thing?
Why is it still a thing?
And it's literally the top headline this morning on the industry sites that we don't need to poke them in the eye, so we won't say who the clients were. Major brand names in technology who have become victims of ransomware. I believe that, well, if you took two different trends that we are all dealing with right now and you add this technology, there is cybercrime, there is everybody's on a Zoom call, and then there is the ability to fake somebody's face in the midst of all that. We live in a video-enabled world. We're going to spend more time remotely looking at other people's faces than we ever anticipated. And right now you can tell, hey, that's Carl over there, and that's Dave down there, and that's because neither of you have purchased this technology yet. Give it a year, and then you might be able to literally have a stand-in.
Well, and on the deep fake side, I mean, the deep fake basically flags this as technology that is so good that you're not going to be able to tell your clients this one's real and that one's fake. I mean, you will not be able to know the difference. The FBI might today.
Maybe.
But you can't.
You know, but I'm going to point to, we did a whole segment just a moment ago on, I don't know, regulation that might help here too. But, but you know, the real fear here is the, you know, you do have to be aware of this technology at the very minimum in terms of the way you think about security and think about validation, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, this is, it has lots of positives. There's that too. You know, there's lots of upside to the way this could be used. You can do all kinds of flexible new bits from, you know, anonymizing data. If we want to anonymize sources, if we want to provide like that kind of insight, I can see all kinds of upside to this too. But we've got to be aware of the downsides and specifically these security issues that are potentially to come.
Well, and see, that's the thing, right? The first use case is because it's coming from the Disney camp. Everybody thinks about entertainment. I can think of many use cases where this is really valuable technology. in business, in law enforcement, in developer circles, right? I see a lot of positive applications for the technology, but like anything, it's a tool that is neither good nor bad. It depends on what your intentions are and the motivations of the actors who are using it. And I think, unfortunately, this one has so much potential for negative impact that this is not going to be like 10 years before the bad guys figure out this technology and start coming for your email inbox like they are now. They're not going to get to this technology late. I think they will be early developers of this
technology. Well, and last week, I think, we talked about the nefarious uses of facial recognition. Intentional or unintentional, if facial recognition is going to advance, you know, and then we're going to have fake facial stuff advancing. I don't know where it goes, but the genie's out of the bottle. And there's no way to say you can't develop this technology, you can't develop that technology. You know, it's here and it's not going to go away.
Yes, we're just going to have to think about the ways that we want it used, the implications of where it is. And we have to think about the large scale one. I mean, I really do think a lot about this idea of what happens when we can't trust video in courtrooms. Like I think about that as you know, because we're quickly at that point, if reasonable doubt is the standard, and I can go in and go, you can't prove that that's actually a real video, that wasn't doctored. You can't prove it. It has really broad ramifications.
Yeah, because all you have to do in that courtroom is come in with your own new deep fake that you say, I created this one, and it shows that guy over here doing something else.
Here's the bailiff stealing that car.
Right, exactly.
Dang, scary stuff.
Well, we didn't answer that one. Sorry, listeners.
But, you know, in terms of a takeaway, I would say that this is one of these things you need to be very aware of. You need to have your head up, and you need to realize when this enters your space the first time, it will be a surprise. The second time, it's on you, and you need to be ready to educate your clients about how this is being used. And today, I can't tell you how.
Yes, exactly. We just know it's coming, so be prepared for the creative.
Why our industry is so much fun. You will never stop learning new stuff.
Exactly. Speaking of the future, let's do our topic on life after the pandemic. So what's our topic today after the pandemic?
Well, today we wanted to think a little bit about social media and content generation and what we're seeing kind of during this time, as there's a lot of it where it's reliant for information. But I think we also want to talk about what is the question around where are our thoughts on limiting content and what moderation looks like and what the need is for this.
It's interesting for me. I did a little Google search on Facebook self-regulation, and the first hit was from last month, which is, you know, a week ago. And then the previous one is from a year before that, like almost to the day. You know, it's a never-ending topic of conversation is how is Facebook regulating themselves? The government wants to get in on it. Facebook does a lot of self-regulation because they want it to be friendly enough and usable enough that you're not offended when you show up. You know, that we've talked before, they filter out stuff that nobody wants to see, like murders and animal torture and so forth. They filter out a lot of stuff that is a regular fodder for the news on, oh, can we display a woman's breast? Well, no, unless she's breastfeeding. Okay, but what if she's breastfeeding a goat? Like, oh my God. You know, and it never stops. And then there's the political side of things. Well, should Facebook be regulating what constitutes truth? Twitter is also in the same boat. You know, what constitutes truth, and how do we regulate it? Is our job to regulate it, and do we label it? You know,
obviously this is catnip for me. So it's like, of course, you know, so first off, I want to observe when you have a monopoly or a duopoly, as companies like particularly Facebook does on digital advertising, right? I mean, if you're a small business and you need to do advertising, you have two options, Facebook and Google. That's really it. Those are the only things you can do. Everybody else is irrelevant. And so from my perspective, we should be looking at this to understand the economics behind the situation. But I want to pose another line of thinking to one that I haven't talked about here that I'd throw out. I do think this is an opportunity for people to pivot and do something interesting. I'm at the point where I would pay real money to have an environment where I'm not where I'm not the product in terms of being advertised to, but where I'm paying to have an environment. I've heard this idea, so this isn't original for me, but I'm going to spring it up because I'm for it. Is some organization like Twitter, who's not particularly good at advertising and selling advertising, could do away with it completely and sell subscriptions. And it could be entirely based around the number of followers you have. If you're in a small, it could be free for anybody without a lot of followers. But for somebody who has, say, you know, 10,000 followers or something, you might pay $100 a month to get access to that. And if you're a big celeb and you have 1 million followers, you might pay more than that to have a platform where everyone's bought in. It's subscription based, and that changes the dynamics of engagement 100%.
Well, see, I agree with your general theme and your specific approach, right? Generally, it is the economics that will alter the experience, because governments have been trying to regulate and social media companies have been pretending to self-regulate, and nothing changes until 400 advertisers send an email that says, hey, that check that was going to be in the mail for next month, no, it's not. And then they, in a token way so far, they sit up and go, hey, we're paying attention. We'll get a little bit better at this. But you can see in public statements as well as all of the documentation, Zuckerberg's response to this whole thing is, we'll get through it. We have to, you know, make sure that we're paying attention, but it's temporary and all the advertisers will come back. Yep. That's what they believe. I think that the market needs to remind them and teach them lessons. That mechanism would be radically easier to enforce if it was the users who were actually paying for the experience instead of the advertisers. If their economic motivation was, I need to prevent user churn because that's cash money, then customer satisfaction is your satisfaction. Right now, customer satisfaction on any of these social media platforms is the advertiser. They really don't care whether they make you as a user happy. In fact, they have published results from their own research that indicate the more pissed off you are on social media, the more engaged you stay and the longer you stick around and the more advertising you see. Making you mad is part of their business model right now because it's all about engagement. If they were to flip that around and say, let's make the model about the user, not about the sponsor, everything would change to user satisfaction. I think that's brilliant. I don't think you're going to get them to agree based on the number of zeros in Zuckerberg's bank account right now. I think he's going to dictate the terms.
So interesting, because on LinkedIn, I can't remember when I first started giving my money to LinkedIn, but 20 or 30 bucks a month, I completely see that as an investment in my business. And I pay it every month and I never bat an eye. And it doesn't occur to me that, like, I don't understand how, what people do there for free. Right. And then I go to Facebook and I'm like, yeah. I think they would lose 1 billion subscribers if they charged a penny a month. Right, the whole concept that you got to pay for it to have access to that is antithetical to their business model. And so I don't know that they can start charging at this point.
And I think they're too entrenched to do it, but I think somebody else might be interested in
trying.
Well,
I was just going to say, I remember when, you know, MySpace dominated the universe, and most people listening today don't know what MySpace is.
Yeah, right. See, I am a believer in the principle of disruptive innovation, and I buy that disruption comes from beneath in the marketplace. It's not the big boys who will surrender their economic model and their sunk cost recovery model. They're not going to walk away from the way things are right now, but an upstart who does things fundamentally differently, who has a different economic model, they can. And I think you're going to find, not to be, you know, too real world on people, I'll predict it's going to take about 4 more months before most reasonable people throw up their hands and go, dude, I cannot log on to this stuff anymore. I cannot even filter through it for commercial reasons. This is what kills me about it. Most small businesses right now are just barely figuring out digital advertising, right? It's, that's not a new field. There's tons of examples of how to do it successfully. But when you go into the SMB, you're finally getting that hockey stick of adoption of very small businesses advertising well and profitably on digital media, right about the time that the big boys turn it into a cesspool. And now, do you really want your advertising showing up on Facebook? I mean, I could show you a profitable way to do it, but would you want to?
Well, it's so I'm actually going to make the close point by saying, like, we literally were having this struggle conversation among the three of us, and I'll give our listeners a little insight into what we were thinking. So we generally, for every week, we throw topics around in email. We are old school on this one, right? Like, so we email the three of us have generally emails flying back and forth where somebody finds an article and shares it. We had this idea to say it would be really cool to involve listeners and the community in this conversation. Sometimes topics get discarded. We made some interesting points, but decided, that wasn't 10 minutes we wanted to vote to it, despite the fact we had a couple of cool ideas.
Or it had too many profanities in it.
There's that too. We can't figure out a place to put this conversation to share it with everyone. Carl has a very legitimate point to not want an interrupt-driven thing like a Slack or a Teams or something like that, which makes sense to me. We then look at Facebook and say, we're not convinced. LinkedIn seems like it should be right, but you don't actually really get engagement over there. And Twitter is hard, right? Like, it just didn't quite fit. And so we're literally struggling saying, how do we do what we want to do in terms of have some of these conversations online? I'm going to end it by saying, listeners, we'd love to hear from you on this. We would love to be able to have, even if you just want to see the conversations, where can that happen that would be useful? Or how could you comment on that? Like, where, give us some feedback, because it's an issue. Not only are we thinking about it long-term, we're literally struggling with it just now with implementation.
And feel free to refer to us as the olds in your email when you comment on it.
And if you happen to come up with a social media that leaves Mark Zuckerberg in the poorhouse, that's not the worst thing.
We're okay with that too.
All righty, enough of all that. No, and notice how much we just hardly ever swear on this show. I'm just saying, I need.
It's very rare. We're very PG.
We're sticking to it. We're sticking to the PG.
And this very clean conversation will conclude episode 67 of the Killing It podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.